good morning, everybody. This is Glenn Coble, and you're listening to On the Air with Glenn Coble here on WWGH 107.1 on your FM dial. And today we have a guest. As is usual, the third Thursday of every month, we have Fred Malone from the Marion Historical Society here. He's not one of those guys that just talks about the Historical Society. He talks about everything. Sometimes I find it hard to get him to shut up. Okay, talk into your mic and let's see if I've got you up.
Are we good now?
I'm not sure. Try it again.
How about this?
No, I screwed it up now. Okay, there we go. Now we got you. I believe. Pull the gray mic over to you. I think it's picking you up better than the green one. Okay.
All right, how's it?
Oh, that's much better. Yeah, much better. All right. Well, Fred, it's been a month. Lots of things have gone under the bridge.
Yes, I have.
Talk to me.
Well, I was thinking last night what we could talk about today, and I mentioned when I was here last month, I mentioned a couple of books that I had just finished reading, and one I think I was reading at the time. And the one in particular that I talked about that I promised that I would bring back the title and the author. My problem, Glenn, is now that I'm, past that big 7-0 mark, my memory is not as good as it used to be. Now,
oh, boy, you're talking to the choir, man.
I have to clarify that. I can remember something that happened when I was 10 years old, but to ask me what I did on Monday of this week, and I don't remember. So
I wrote my memoir about 10 years ago, and I could remember all that stuff I did when I was
in good shape.
I couldn't remember the
So anyway, I thought this time I wanted to bring the book in and at least mention the title and mention the author's name and talk about a little bit about a couple of things that I really enjoyed about this book. And as I talked last time, the book is about Lincoln. After Lincoln was elected president, he made a train trip from Springfield, Illinois to Washington, D.C.
And it wasn't a meandering train trip.
Yes, it wasn't an ordinary train trip. He could have, of course, gotten from Springfield to Washington, D.C. in a couple of days.
Right.
But because in 1861, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, anything really west of Pennsylvania was still considered the West.
Uh-huh.
So even though he was extremely popular in those what we now call Midwestern states and the Western states, because California and Oregon were states by 1861, there was still the population on the West Coast was not nearly as great as it was, obviously, on the East Coast, because the original 13 colonies and the Southern states and some of the Midwestern states had become heavily populated because that's where people went. So he wasn't as well known on the eastern seaboard, obviously, as he was in Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, so forth. So they decided that this trip should meander around the eastern seaboard so that more people could see him after the election, the president-elect, and he could stop and speak to the people so they could get really a sense of who he was. So after the election, they decided to set up this train trip. So again, it would meander through the what we would now call the Midwest and the eastern seaboard, rather than make that direct line. So they started out in Springfield, Illinois. Of course, that's where Lincoln was living at the time. He was practicing law there. He'd served in the Congress as a representative from that area.
Now, was he born in Illinois or Indiana or Kentucky?
He was born in Kentucky.
Yeah,
right.
Okay.
He was born in Kentucky.
All three of those states claim him.
Yeah, it's true. They do. But this journey started in Springfield, and it began on February 11th of 1861, which is ironically the night before his birthday.
Oh.
On February the 12th, he's going to turn 52 years old. Just been recently elected president.
A young puppy.
He was. So this journey actually took 18 days to go from Springfield, Illinois, to Washington, D.C. And I want to mention that the primary towns that they had planned to stop in, where he could give formal speeches and even in some places stay overnight. But then along the way, they also stopped in small villages if they had time, for even if it was only 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And he would go out on the back of the train, make an appearance, say a few words, and then they would go on to the next major
grin
location.
And wave, yeah.
Grin and wave. And a lot of times he would make, short comments or speeches or talk to the crowd or whatever, for whatever time they had. But they began in Springfield, again, February 11th, 1861. First stop, major stop, was Indianapolis. Then they went to Cincinnati, Columbus, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Buffalo, New York, Rochester, New York, Syracuse, New York, Utica, New York, Albany, New York,
holy cow,
Troy, New York, Poughkeepsie, New York, New York City, Trenton, New Jersey, Philadelphia, Harrisburg, Baltimore, and finally D.C.
Holy cow.
Now, those were the big stops. Yeah. In between, they stopped in a lot of little burgs, mm-hmm. as I said, along the way, so he could speak to the crowd. That's why it took 18 days to make this trip.
He didn't stop in Marion, did he?
No, not to my knowledge.
Okay.
But along the way, there were several small places in Ohio that he did stop, as well as some of the other states. But the interesting part of the book is, and the book is called Lincoln on the Verge. I almost forgot to give the title.
Yeah.
Lincoln on the Verge. And it actually says 13 days to Washington, but it actually took 18.
Uh-huh.
And the author's name is Ted Widmer, W-I-D-M-E-R. And if you go online, you can find this by just typing in Lincoln on the Verge. I know you can get it from Amazon, probably Google Books. You can also get it from Barnes & Noble if you're, you know, over in Mansfield where mm-hmm. Barnes & Noble has an office
sure.
there, or down in Columbus at Polaris. But it's a very interesting book. It just came out earlier this year. And a couple of things I thought were really interesting about this. On his journey, there were a couple of, actually three future presidents that he made contact with, ironically. In
okay,
Columbus.
This was in the
1861.
Yeah.
The first person that he ran across was James Garfield, who, of course, was also from Ohio. At this time, he would have been pretty young. I think he was elected president in 1880, 1882, something like that.
Wasn't he assassinated, too?
He was assassinated, yeah, ironically.
Yeah.
But on the stop in Columbus, Garfield had made the trip to Columbus in hopes of seeing Lincoln, and actually got the handshake from Lincoln.
COVID wasn't going on, right?
Wasn't going on at the time. Then, of course, Garfield was from up Mentor, up on the lake, and he served in Congress for a number of years before he was elected president. And then, as you said, he was assassinated, within the first year of his term in office. And that's how... excuse me, that's how we ended up getting Chester Arthur as president. But also along the way, he ran into William McKinley when they were up in the Canton area, and also Grover Cleveland when they were in Buffalo, New York. And I think Grover Cleveland at the time was serving as sheriff of that particular county, and I don't remember what the county was that Buffalo was in New York, but Grover Cleveland was sheriff up there, and that's how they bumped into one another. So during that trip, he ran into three future presidents of the United States.
All of them were probably pretty well connected politically.
Well, McKinley and Cleveland would have been by that time, because McKinley was already known in local politics. He served as a prosecuting attorney in Stark County for a number of years before he was elected governor of Ohio. So, he was. And Cleveland, by being a county official, county sheriff, and back mm-hmm. in those days, county sheriff had a lot more clout than what it does now. I mean, county sheriff still has a lot of clout today,
sure.
but that was a pretty... high political office if you were elected as county sheriff.
There are counties out west where the county sheriff is the politician
sure.
in the county.
Absolutely,
yeah.
And it was that way a lot in the early part, well, really throughout the entire 19th century. So it wasn't unusual that they would have bumped into one another along those lines. But I just thought it was interesting that, happened to run into three future U.S. presidents on this 18-day, 1,900-mile train trip. 1,900 miles. Now, if you look
terrible.
At the map between Springfield and D.C., it's certainly not 1,900 miles.
No.
But when you look at the trace, the
probably
the,
800.
You trace the meandering that the train did. 1,900 miles is not certainly out of the realm of possibility.
And then he decided to go even south of Washington, D.C. to Baltimore and then come back up north.
Right, and the reason for that was because very early on, well, actually even before the train trip started, Alan Pinkerton had discovered that there was a plot.
I've got my milk and my bowl and my saucer.
Sounds like you're getting ready for breakfast. What are you having?
Well, I'm having a bowl of Golden Grahams with a side of toast with golden butter and a nice golden glass of apple juice.
I should have known. WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, The Talking Place.
GTG, BRB, OMW, be there in a few. You may think that these kinds of texts are fine because of their length, and you can easily send them at a stoplight. But no, answering one text can take your attention away from the road for 5 seconds. And traveling at 55 miles an hour, that's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Make good decisions. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopRex.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
All right, I really messed Fred up there. I didn't give him his 1 minute sign because I didn't know we only had 1 minute to go. Pick us up back up where you were.
I think before we got cut off there, I was mentioning that this train trip, before they left Springfield, Alan Pinkerton, who had just started his Pinkerton investigating company, detective agency, had discovered a possible plot to assassinate Lincoln before he got to Washington, D.C. And from what he had learned early on, the assassination attempt was going to take place in Baltimore. They had to make some diversions along the way in order to try to avert this assassination attempt. And it was actually a plot that was derived by a number of Southern sympathizers. Of course, when Lincoln was elected in 1861, the country was basically falling apart.
Yeah, yeah.
It was in pretty sad shape because a number of states had already talked about seceding from the Union, mm-hmm. South Carolina being one of the principal ones that had talked about that. And this was occurring even as early as 1859, so 2 years prior to Lincoln being elected. James Buchanan was president there before Lincoln, and quite frankly, he wasn't doing a very good job.
Yeah, he didn't do a bang-up job any time he was president.
His term in office was
that's why you asked me to play him, I think.
Well, no, not necessarily, because he's a very interesting character, but unfortunately, he had not done too much to hold the country together.
Right.
And so one of the groups that was working to devise this plot to assassinate Lincoln before he was able to take the oath of office was a group that had actually formed in Baltimore. And off the tip of my head, I can't remember the name of it, but they were almost like a KKK organization.
Right.
But it was mostly a group of Southern sympathizers. And believe it or not, John Wilkes Booth had been a member of that organization, a member of that organization. But Pinkerton had discovered this plot through some of his sources. He had started to branch out nationwide. And so he had made contact with the president's entourage very early on and made a very small number of people that were associated with the entourage aware of what was happening with this particular plot. They didn't want too many people to know about it because they were afraid if it did, obviously, the word would get out and possibly the people that were making the plan would change their plans, change where the location was going to happen, and they would lose all the information that they'd already garnered.
Yeah.
So he had some people that were moles that were actually working within the organization. So that's how he got most of his information. And one of them was actually a female. She was probably, I would say without doubt, the first female detective in the United States. And I don't remember her name. I didn't jot it down. Mm-hmm. But there were a select group of people that were involved with the trip that knew what was going on, so they were very careful. They also changed trains many, many, many times along the line.
It sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, and a lot of it was because of the plot, and then a lot of it was because a lot of the different rail lines that they were traveling on wanted to put their best foot forward.
Sure they did.
So whenever they would get to a change in whoever owned the line, the president of the company would, of course, obviously volunteer his presidential car to carry Lincoln to the next location. So they did change trains quite a bit, and they used several different cars. But when they came through Columbus, Lincoln did speak at the Ohio State House.
Oh.
And currently on display down at the State House is a flag that flew overhead when he was speaking.
Oh,
so it's on display. I think it's in the rotunda. I haven't been down to see it yet, but I think it's in the rotunda. And then ironically, as a twist of fate, when he was returning to Springfield in a casket, his body lay in state at the rotunda at the State House in Columbus.
So. Oh, I didn't know that he laid in state there.
Yes,
that's interesting.
Yes. So that's kind of just an interesting twist of fate.
You mentioned John Wilkes Booth.
Yes.
And my family, you know, all families have their legends, right?
Sure.
And supposedly we are related to him a long way off. But anyway, have you seen the ads on television where they're going to do a show where supposedly he escaped getting caught by supposedly burning someplace
down?
Yeah,
there's actually...
Is that true?
They're taking that from a book, and I think it's called, Bloody Nightmare or something. I can't remember the title of it. I've read the book. And they're adapting this program that they're going to be putting on TV from this book. Yeah. In fact, if I can remember, I'll bring the book in the next time if I can find it.
I assume it's not fact. It's supposition.
Well.
Or is it factual?
There's always been a question about whether Booth was in the barn at the time that the fire was set. So there's always been some quote-unquote mystery as to whether he escaped through the back of the barn and whether that was someone else that was shot, and they put it out to the public that he was assassinated or he was killed, you know. So there is some question about it. So now I think there's some facts that maybe lean that way, but there's no absolute proof. And, of course, no one knows where his body is buried.
Oh.
He was buried in an unmarked grave. Supposedly somewhere along the banks of the Potomac River.
Or somebody was buried.
Well, again, there's big question marks about this. It's one of those mysteries that you really can't disprove or prove one way or the other.
Well, I guess we can rest assured he's dead now.
Well, yeah, he's dead now. There's no question about it now. But anyway, he was definitely a part of that plot. He was a part of the membership of the organization that was creating that plot.
Hmm.
But getting back to this the reason why they made this train trip, obviously because, as I said before, Lincoln was not as well known in the East as he was in the West. Now, in the election of 1861, there were actually four candidates running for president.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And of course, we only hear about
the two
main ones,
yeah.
Lincoln being a Republican and his old nemesis, Stephen Douglas, being a Democrat. And, of course, Douglas had defeated Lincoln for a Senate seat from Illinois a couple of years prior to the presidential election. So when Lincoln made this rapid gain of popularity to all of a sudden go from a defeated senatorial candidate 2 years prior to now the presidential nominee of the Republican Party was a big leap of faith, so to speak. So that was one of the reasons why they wanted to do what they did with the trip, so that people could become more familiarized with him.
Sure.
But also in this election was John Breckinridge, who later became a general in the Civil War.
Oh, okay.
That's probably where you might have heard the name.
Yeah, I heard the name, but I didn't know why.
And also a man by the name of John Bell. So there were four candidates in this presidential election.
Were there parties back then?
Yeah, John Breckinridge actually was a member of the Know-Nothing Party.
Oh, okay. I remember hearing about the Know-Nothing
Party.
Well,
at that time in Congress, when Lincoln was elected, there were 13 different political parties
that
had members of Congress in the United States Congress.
So you had to get a consensus of all sorts of parties.
Yeah, you really did. And then John Bell was a member of the Constitution Union Party.
Oh, okay.
And I had to bring a list of all the different parties. There's another book that I read in the last year or two about the Congress in those days prior to the Civil War, about the last 10 years up through the Buchanan administration, that talks about the difference of opinion and the difference of political parties that were ruling in the House of Representatives and also in the Senate. And there used to be duels on the floor of the Senate. I mean,
real duels?
Well, not with guns, although there was a gunfire that was shot on the floor of the U.S. Constitution,
really?
The U.S. House of Representatives at one time. But there were canings that took place members carried walking sticks or canes, and there were a few times that members beat each other with their canes on the floor of the House of Representatives.
Civil discourse.
Oh, my word. It was unbelievable. It was a bloody scene sometimes. And there were a couple of duels that took place outside of Congress as a result of disagreements and arguments in Congress.
No sword fights that you know of.
Not that I'm aware of, but there are a lot of canings that went on.
Yeah, well, that's kind of a sword fight.
So really, the election of 1861, although Lincoln was elected, it wasn't by a huge margin because there was such a diverse matter of opinion going on then. And because of all the discourse that was taking place in the southern states over slavery with the abolitionist movement and so forth, and the talk from several of the states, Georgia, South Carolina primarily being the first, of wanting to secede from the Union. And then, of course, you got the Dred Scott decision that took place in Missouri, the Kansas-Missouri. So there were so many different things that were pulling people in different directions. Now, Lincoln did go on to win New York State. He won Pennsylvania and he won Ohio, which at the time were pretty good battleground states, especially New York. Mm-hmm. So he was fortunate in that regard. And I did take a quick look to see. I think now you have to have 270 electoral votes to win the presidency in the Electoral College. And I think at the time Lincoln won, it wasn't nearly that many. I think he ended up with 180 electoral votes, which gave him the presidency.
But there were considerably less states.
Yeah. I think, if I remember right, when we started the Civil War, we were, at 38 states, maybe something like that?
I don't know.
Between 35 and
you're the historian,
states.
Not me.
Well, like I said, my memory isn't as good as it used to be. But it's just a very interesting book, and anybody that's interested in presidential history, you know, you don't have to be a historian to be interested in Lincoln. I think Lincoln is probably one of the most studied presidents
that there is.
I think there have been more books written about Lincoln than probably any other U.S. president in history, because he was such an interesting person, such an interesting character in our history.
And had a pretty interesting family.
Oh,
his wife was a crazy person.
Well, she was, and she had a brother that fought in the Confederacy.
So there was always a problem.
Always a problem with people, you know, in the North, knowing that Lincoln was married to a Southern sympathizer living in the White House with him. And, you know, he had his problems with her as well.
Now
she spent money like water, money that they didn't have.
Lincoln
was a poor man when he went to the presidency.
Sure, he was.
He was a struggling lawyer. He and his law partner in Springfield, Herndon. His name, Billy Herndon, was his partner's name in Springfield. And although they had a good practice there, you know, attorneys weren't making the kind of money then that they make today. Yeah. Excuse me to all my attorney friends.
Nobody was making the type of money
they weren't
today.
So you know, he was not a well off man when he won the presidency. So yes, he had problems with her. She at one point in her life she was committed. To what they called them, insane asylums at that time. She had a lot of issues. Lincoln, of course, himself was a manic depressive.
Mm-hmm.
He suffered from a lot of serious issues with depression.
That's not a job you should have if you're a manic depressive.
It isn't. And of course, you know, a lot of this was not known at the time. But still, there are a lot of very good books out there about a Lincoln that you can get your hands on. But this is one of the most recent ones, this Lincoln on the Verge, 13 Days to Washington.
It's a rather lengthy book, it looks like.
Yeah, it's probably 500-600 pages, something like that.
Yeah, that would take me five years to read.
My wife says she'd never get through it. But it is a book well worth your time, especially now with what's going on with this presidential election that we're involved in today. We think we have problems now, but there have been problems throughout history with presidential elections.
Yeah.
They've all not been a bed of roses or, you know, a basket full of cherries. There's always some issues, but this is one that I think is very interesting and very well worth your time. We have 1 minute till the next one. Okay?
And
got that.
And also the issues back then were not issues of honesty and the things that we're talking about today. It was the issue of seceding from the Union.
Seceding from the Union. Also, the country was basically bankrupt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Before the election, the country was in serious financial difficulties. So economy was a big deal back then as well. But primarily we were talking about a big division in the country.
All right. Well, we'll be back after about 2 minutes, okay?
Scott, do you remember when Hillary Clinton came to Marion in 2016?
Yes, I do. I stood outside of the Harding Hotel in the rain waiting to get an interview that didn't happen.
You know why she chose the Harding Hotel to meet?
No, I don't.
Well, they used to have a hair salon in the lobby, and she could sure use it.
Here we go again. WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Back with Fred Malone of the Marion County Historical Society, and also general knowledge of everything he has. And
as my wife says, I've got a lot of useless facts.
Well, you know, one of the neat things was, and you opened the book up, and it shows that trip.
Yeah.
And so I asked you when it was, and you pointed out it was in February, the day after his birthday.
The day before
his birthday.
February 11th, yeah.
Can you imagine going up to Albany, New York?
Well, Buffalo.
Buffalo, yes.
Yeah.
There would have been snow everywhere.
The weather that comes off of the lake, the Niagara River and the lake up there. What Niagara Falls looks like in the winter.
Yeah.
So you can imagine going by train. And, of course, trains, they had potbelly stoves on them. That was their only method of heating, those train cars. So you can imagine it had to be a very cold time in February and early March.
I used to take a train to work when I worked in Chicago at DePaul University. I used to take a train to work it was about 2 hours. No, it was about an hour and a half one way. No, it wasn't even quite that long. Maybe an hour and 10 minutes. Anyway, they didn't have any heat on those old trains. They do have heat on them now.
Sure.
But back then, we were using train cars from the 30s and the 20s.
Absolutely.
And there was no heat on it. So it was cold as ice.
Yeah,
I can't imagine doing that for 18 days.
Well, 18 days. And then remember, too, that these were steam engines. They weren't diesels.
Yeah.
So
they
had to stop for water periodically and fuel.
Yeah.
So even though I read the major stops, they were making other stops in between at small villages and
to warm his hands.
To basically get more water, take on more water,
take
on more cordwood.
Sure.
Because they had to keep those boilers going.
Well, so, give us the name of that book one last time.
His name is Lincoln on the Verge.
Okay.
And the guy garnished his title from the fact that he's on the verge of being inaugurated. He's already won the election, but the inauguration isn't until March 4th.
Okay.
Remember, in those days, they were still having inaugurations in March. They hadn't moved to January yet.
Okay.
And that goes all the way back to Washington's time.
So was the election, do you know whether the election was still in November?
Oh, yes, it was still the first
Monday. So there was a long period
of
lame duckness.
Yes, yes. You had all of November, December, January, February, and the first couple of days in March.
Wow.
So you had 4 months that the former president was basically a lame duck president, which really didn't make much difference, because if you think about it, if you've read anything about Buchanan and Buchanan's administration, he was a lame duck from day one. I mean, he just really had no ambition to be president, and he was America's only bachelor president.
Yeah,
he was never married. He was never married.
I did some cursory research into him after you mentioned there might be a possibility that I could be Mr. Buchanan at the president's dinner. I was surprised that he was the only bachelor.
He was the only bachelor
and,
president.
There were some interesting rumors about him.
There were very interesting rumors going around about him, kind of like J. Edgar Hoover.
Yes, absolutely.
They were both in the same category.
Yes, the same category.
And again,
of rumor.
Not to dispel that today because that's commonplace today, but
yeah.
In the 1850s and 60s,
oh, that would have been horrible.
An individual that was gay was it would just wasn't heard of.
Yes.
And obviously there were people that were, but they did not make it publicly known.
Right. Right.
And I think a lot of, and again, I don't think there's any proof, concrete evidence that proves this one way or the other, but the evidence that is available does kind of lean that direction.
Well, he would never have, nobody in that era would have ever come out and said it publicly.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And it would probably have prevented him from being elected president in the 1856 election.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
well,
but anyway, that's the book, Lincoln on the Verge. Ted Widmer is the author.
We've got about 10 minutes before we break for our big break.
Okay.
So what do you have for us take 10 minutes? Oh, and by the way, thank you so much for those trivia questions.
Oh, you're entirely welcome.
Marion County trivia questions,
and again,
which I'm still using.
And again, most of that information was compiled by Randy Winland a number of years ago.
Did you do the writing, or did he do the writing? The answers are all handwritten.
Actually, my wife wrote those.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They're easily read.
Yeah. Yeah, she did. Well, she's a former school teacher as
okay.
So.
I do have a question about one of them. I'll ask you during the break.
Okay, great. I did want to mention one thing that just came upon my attention this morning. We all know Phil Reed.
Yes.
You know Phil Reed.
Sure.
Phil has, of course, with the fire department here in Marion for years and years.
Right. He was the
taught
chief.
At Marion Catholic School, yeah. Been a coach, former board member for the Marion County Historical Society, very active member in the Historical Society.
And even though we were on opposite sides of the aisle, he and I were friends.
Yes,
I
mean, wonderful guy, an author in his own right,
yeah.
You know. But I just want to mention that his wife, Paula, passed away
Sunday. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
The calling hours, I'll give this. I guess it was in the paper yesterday. I don't get the paper on the day. I get it a day late from my in-laws. So I just stopped at the museum this morning to pick up some other information there that I wanted, and the girls printed this out for me. So anyway, she passed away Sunday at her home. She was, of course, married to Phil Reed. The calling hours, I believe, are this evening from 4 to 7 at Boyd Borden Funeral Home over on Main Street. And mm-hmm. then the funeral will be held at the funeral home on Friday at 10:30 in the morning. So, and they will be following all the COVID guidelines.
I think good. Yeah.
25 people in the funeral home at any given time. You need to wear a mask and all that. So
okay. Now, Phil's not in health right now. Yeah.
Well, Phil's had some health issues.
Right.
They were both, I think, in DeWolf House for a while. I think they were in there back in the early part of the year. They were there for a while. But I think they had recently moved back home again. So I thought I saw Phil in the grocery store a couple of weeks ago. By the time I got over to where I thought I saw him, he was already gone, so I didn't get a chance to speak to him. But
okay. It
is a sad passing. And again, Phil has been such an ardent supporter of the Marion County Historical Society for so many years, and of course, very, very important to the city of Marion because of his work with the fire department and his civic work and so forth. So I just wanted to mention that.
Phil and I have our
condolences and our sympathies to Phil Reed and his family. Two sons. I think one son lives here in town yet. One, I think, lives away. I'm not sure exactly where the other son is, but definitely, Phil, you have our sympathies.
Phil and I have a relationship because he was a member of the old guard, which guarded the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier.
Yes.
And also was in the Drummond Fife Corps, Drummond Bugle Corps. Mm-hmm. And we were both, when we were in Washington, D.C., I was there with the Army Field Band. Well, the Army Field Band and the old guard are under the same general.
So
we have a relationship.
Sure. Yeah.
And we used to talk about it quite a bit.
Well, of course, interesting with Phil, he went back to to college and got his degree late in life.
Yeah.
And then taught at Marian Catholic after that. And so it always goes to show that you're never at a stage in your life where it's too late to learn.
Yeah.
And too late to improve yourself through education. And you don't have to necessarily go get a formal education. You can go to the library and get books and educate mm-hmm. yourself, much as Lincoln did.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Lincoln never had a formal education.
Hopefully
he was self-taught.
Hopefully you don't have to do it by the light of a fireplace.
Exactly, yeah. Oh, and interestingly enough, last night, this is so funny. Last night I'm checking always check the History Channel, PBS, those few channels that I like to look, and Turner Classic Movies last night had Lincoln of Illinois on.
Oh, yeah.
Which was made in 19, I think it was filmed in 1960, maybe. And it was Lincoln's early life, starting from his early life in Kentucky, going up to the time that he had been elected president and was leaving Springfield on this train trip to go to Washington.
Was he wrestling then?
He did. Yeah. Yes, he did. When he was running a general store in New Salem, Illinois.
Yeah, yeah. He
was a wrestler. Yeah.
He has over 200 victories.
Yes,
and
yes.
He's in the Wrestlers Hall of Fame.
Absolutely. Yes, and he fought in the Black Hawk War.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, he was a member.
Tell
of
us
militia.
About the Black Hawk War, because I'm at a loss.
The Black Hawk Indians, which were one of the primary tribes on the frontier. Illinois mm-hmm. at that time, there was an uprising, and they were gathering up militia to go against the Black Hawk Indians, and Lincoln was elected captain of the militia group out of New Salem, Illinois, where he was postmaster and also running the general store. So he had to take this group of raw recruits and whip them into shape so they could go off to the Black Hawk War. And Lincoln was proud to say that he never fired at an Indian during the entire Black Hawk War.
Is that
War.
Right? So, yeah. Well, that's wonderful.
But he was a veteran. He was a veteran.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
Well, we've only got, we only have about 4 minutes. So.
Okay, well, I mentioned that at the last time I was here that books are my passion.
Yes, I can tell that.
I have way too many books. My wife will tell you that. I recently had a new building built in the back of my property, which contains a multitude of my books now. And I have actually trimmed my library somewhat and have been
donating some books. It's called Malone's Library, right?
Yeah, well, I still have a lot of books in the house. Like libraries, I have stacks, which my wife doesn't appreciate at all. And recently we did some remodeling in our family room where I had a tremendous amount of stacks. And I had an empty dog pen that's about as big as your desk that when I had a boxer, I put my boxer in that when we were gone. And so I took a lot of my books, and they are now in a dog pen.
Yeah, that's so them up, right?
I have a dog pen full of books, but then I have shelves and I have stacks and I have a new building that has a lot of books in it. So
I'm
passionate for books.
I wish I had that ability, but I think I've told you I have a little dyslexia.
Yes, right.
And I fall asleep after I read about 10 minutes.
Well, as I mentioned to you the last time I was here, we sell a lot of local books over at Heritage Hall.
Uh-huh.
And I had the girls compile me a list of what we had available. We probably don't have enough time to go through it right now. But when we come back from our break, I want to run through this list kind of quickly,
okay.
Just to tell people what is available, because all the books that we have in our inventory can either be purchased at our website, which is marianhistory.com, or you can go to our phone number. You can call is 740-387-4255, and that's
that again, because we always don't give people time enough to go grab a pencil.
Right, and I'll mention too that we are listed in the phone book. If
okay.
you have a phone book, you can find us in the
phone
book.
If you have a phone book, yeah.
If you have a phone book, which I still do, but you can get us there. But it's 740-387-4255.
Very good.
Or you can go to the website, very simple, marianhistory.com, real simple, all
that
small
simple.
Case letters.
Yep.
And you can either order the books online, use PayPal and pay for them, or you can call the museum, tell them what book you want, even after you've looked at it online, pay for it by credit card, or you can come to the museum, call, they'll run the book out to you.
Oh, that's good.
And you can pay by cash or check or credit card. We've got one of those slide things they can bring out. So. Yeah. we're more than flexible on how you can get a book for the Marion County Historical Society.
We got about 30 seconds. Tell us what hours are you open over
there? The museum
there?
Is currently open Wednesday through Saturday.
Okay.
To come in and take a tour from 1 to 4. However, okay. The office is available 5 days a week, 9 to 4.
Okay.
And even though the museum's closed at 9 in the morning,
you can still
come
get
up,
books then?
You can come up to the State Street entrance or the south side of the building and press the doorbell.
Okay, very good. Well, we'll be back after about 15 minutes, and we're talking with Fred Malone here of the Historical Society. Come back.
You're listening to WWGH Radio, LP Marion, Ohio, The Talking Place, 107.1 FM. From Charlie Evers.
You know, you could come in handy, too, with